WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're positively in the football season. Take a little respite from the Maryland Crab Cake Tour this week. I did 31 crab cakes in breweries last month. We'll be back after it for my 54th birthday next week. I'll have all the details up. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have some Raven scratch-offs to give away, as well as our friends at Goodwill. And I got my Window Nation shirt on, where they just did my windows. They can do yours. 866-90-NATION. They're good people. Put the game on. As many folks know, I don't usually watch the games on television. So as much as I can give this guy some love and say, I love your work, usually you're like red zoning for me, or on the 4 o'clock game or something like that, or on our game or whatever. But I've been going to the games long enough that I don't hear Ian Eagle call a whole lot of Ravens games, except on my replay on my DVR for a course of years. He always makes me laugh. You made me laugh a couple times, because sometimes you're funny. And I know maybe you're trying to be, but I am the guy that laughs at the little digs you get in. Man, you called a colossal failure, 2 in 2 weeks. This is troublesome here in Baltimore this week, and you were in the booth calling it in the rain, and it's great to see you, man. How are you, brother?
I'm doing great, Nestor. Great to be with you. I think, as we know in the NFL, you get reactions, very, very strong reactions after every game. That's what makes the league so enticing and mesmerizing in many ways. So with that, you get a week to stew over it, and then somewhere in the midst, you begin to turn the page and look forward. If you're a Baltimore Ravens fan, you've seen some really good stuff. There's some positive things that you have to feel good about. And then there's been some troubling stuff, and you felt it a bit last year when the team couldn't get to the finish line. Lamar Jackson goes down with the injury. That was basically the end of that, but there were still some winnable games there. And now early portion of this season, when you've got sizable leads against good squads, but sizable leads, what's leading to the negative result? And obviously there was a lot to unpack from this particular game. I do think defensively, they're not where they're eventually going to be. The hope is that it's beginning to mesh, and the mistakes that have been made are correctable mistakes. And then philosophically, I think there was a time you've literally covered every Ravens game played, so you understand how this team has been built and what the mindset has been. But for many, many years, it was, hey, we trust the defense. The defense is going to get it done late in the game. Trust the defense. That's been the outlook for most of the time in Baltimore. And now we've seen a couple of instances where there's a feeling out process of where this defense is and whether or not they're at that stage yet where the coaching staff is completely entrusting what they can do in a big moment. So I think some of the decisions that were made were based on that fact. And I know we can get into analytics, and it's a word that pops up a lot. You know, a lot of it is also gut feel, what you feel in the moment. And in the moment, there is a faction of the fan base that I'm sure felt very strong, kick the field goal, take the lead, force Buffalo to go out there and win it or tie it. And what ended up becoming the result of the game was the fact that Buffalo had no real pressure and stress towards the end. If anything, they manipulated the clock to their advantage so that they were going to walk out of there with a win. And it was all in their hands at that stage.
Ian Eagle is our guest. He, along with Charles Davison, my friend Evan Washburn, Baltimore Zone, calling the games. What game you got this week? I didn't even ask you that.
This week, Carolina hosting San Francisco. So an NFC game on CBS. Two NFC teams going at it.
Well, for all of you guys who do this, Kenny Albert was my original partner. He put me on the air 31 years ago. He comes on every December 13th, and we celebrate here as we get older together. And for you guys, the preparation you put in, and you call hoops, and Kenny's off color with hockey and anything else that they let him call these days. But you zone in. You come in Friday, Saturday. You get sort of the game plan, whatever. I find your job so fascinating in real time. I've watched so much sports, but when I'm into the game, it's not like watching the 49ers on Monday. I don't care who wins or whatever, and I'm just sort of passively saying, oh, there's Buck and Aikman, and they had a thought about this or whatever. But where we are with analysis in real time for every Tony Romo, for every your guy, when you're down on the goal line and it's fourth down and there's 30 seconds and they're making a call, you're making a call, you're up, you're maybe surprised by it. In the history of the game, I thought about this when it was happening and you're calling it. I thought, in the history of the game, if my father were alive right now, if this were a Pop Warner game, if this were any game in the history of football, 4 minutes left in the rain, you got the best kicker on earth, you would want the lead. Analytics came along, before they started writing an inside book, you would just want the lead because you'd want the lead. But it really spoke volumes in real time that John didn't want it. He didn't trust his defense to stop them. Otherwise, he would have said 3 points is good enough. Let's go kick their ass. To your point, the Ray Lewis is, you send nine out there, you kick it, we'll get them off the field, or we'll pop the ball free, or the ball's going to go in the air and we're going to go get it, or the ball's wet, or you'd have some reason to say, let's put the defense out on the field. Man, you guys call that in real time, and then 5 minutes later, the game's over and they lost, and we're all sitting here a week later trying to analyze it. You're trying to do it in real time and make sense of it from your mind, because I'm sure when you're there, you're like, this is a little shocking, right? I mean, but John plays this way.
Yeah, and I think what you have to remind yourself in those moments as a play-by-play announcer, as an analyst, as a sideline reporter, is your words are there forever. So whatever stand you take, whatever words you use, whatever analysis you give, that's it. You don't get to come back and redo it. You don't get to give it a second try on a second pass. So you've got to react in the moment. And you have to react in an authentic way. If you're trying to think what the fans want here, what one fan base is thinking, you've lost all control of what that situation is. What I've noticed with John, having covered him a long time, obviously he's been there now. He's one of the longest tenured coaches in the NFL. He's a Super Bowl champion. He's a really smart guy and has been a very effective leader for this franchise. But I did feel a shift 2018, 2019, where he did lean on the analytics a bit more. And I credit him for opening his brain up and being flexible enough to see that the game was changing and evolving. And with his quarterback, with Lamar Jackson, maybe you do go for it on fourth down more than you ever would have with Joe Flacco. That just makes sense that Lamar could make something happen. So that was the first signs of it, 2018, 2019. I did a game Baltimore at Kansas City. I was working with Dan Fouts at that point. And Dan and I absolutely noticed that John was going against the grain on some things that instinctually, as a football observer for many, many years, Dan, of course, played at the highest level, Hall of Famer, great competitor, great QB. I've been following the sport forever, but going for a two-point conversion or going for a touchdown instead of a field goal.
Or have that fourth on two on your own 31.
Yes. So that started popping up then. And I think John tries to use an amalgam of gut instinct and, well, what do the numbers say? What's the win probability here? He's got people within the organization. It's not people that you and I necessarily know, that their sole job is to determine that in the moment on headset and to let the coaching staff know, hey, this probability is higher if we do this as opposed to if we do that. Look, it's a results-oriented business. My only question when it comes to analytics is, are you winning? Are they turning into wins? I understand win probability and all of that, but the math is the math and the results are the results. And for the Baltimore Ravens, I think all of this is part of the process. I believe this team is a playoff team. I believe they'll be a part of it when the smoke clears. Now, use it to your advantage. Look back on these situations and learn from them. And maybe, given a similar set of circumstances, it will be some pause before that decision is made. There'll be a deeper thought in, hey, this might make a little more sense at this time. Look, credit to Buffalo, credit to Josh Allen. Guy's a great player. The Bills' offense is really good. But you laid it out. The weather was an issue, and I think there is still something to be said for trusting your defense in the moment and taking your chances with that group still capable of making a play like they did to open the game. A couple of them, in fact.
Confidence levels high around here. Ian Eagle is our guest. If you hear the sound, yes, he's the guy that called the game the other day. He'll be calling elsewhere, but probably back on the Ravens beat before it's all over with here at CBS, along with Evan Washburn, who gets to save meal money and hang out downtown and show the guys around his hometown when the crew comes in here. You said something about like being in the moment. You can't. You just said the Ravens are a playoff team. So I'm going to hold you to this, Ian, but because you just said it in the moment. But we're playing the Bengals this week, and I look at it and I say, well, the Steelers and the Browns can't win the division. Somebody's got to win the division.
Correct.
And it feels to me it's one of these two teams. This leads to a bigger, better game this week. And I saw Jonas Schaefer. I want to give him a little credit from the Baltimore Sun because I haven't seen him around camp lately. But he put this up. 16 seconds is all the Ravens have been behind in 4 hours of football.
Crazy.
And in order to be behind, they've had to squander Houston Oilers, Buffalo Bills kinds of, like legendary, awful. It really would be something if there's a parade here with Lamar and he gets $232 guaranteed million dollars at some point from Steve Bisciotti in February, that if I'm writing Purple Rain 3 and this is the abyss you come back from where you just completely melt down twice at home against quality teams, they're going to have to go on the road to Buffalo now because of that, right? Probably, in the amalgam of all of it later on, if there is such a thing as this playoff run. But they can make things right by beating the Bengals. They can easily win the division. They have a really softish kind of schedule. And then they have all of these mysteries, right? Ronnie Stanley, they're floating the Gus bus, and couldn't we use him running 2019 style, right? They got Ajabu maybe coming back. They got JPP chasing him around, playing every play like an old war horse. So there's things happening here, but the linebacking core is a mess. The backside, for all the money they've spent in draft capital, it feels like alignment assignment. Forget technique. You get alignment assignment wrong, it's a mess. And that's happened when the ball went over their head a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
And the new coordinator thing with Wink. And I mean, there's drama here. I mean, for a 2-2 team, we got it all going on in October, don't we?
Yeah, no doubt about it. This is not a finished product by any stretch. Normally, you have a better sense of what the Ravens are all about because they've had such a pronounced type of style. And this year's version is absolutely a work in progress. With that said, the pieces in my mind are still there, and you've got Lamar Jackson. So as long as he's healthy, you're going to be in just about every game. You're going to be highly competitive. And now the question, do the two blown leads stifle you? Is that a nightmare that becomes reoccurring? Or do you get them out of your system and learn from them and, lack of a better term, step on the opponent's throat when necessary? There are things that happen in a game, and it's every single game in the NFL. There's no getting around it. Call here, non-call there, inches, first down, non-first down, that determines outcomes of games. In this particular game, in my mind, and the only reason I brought it up a couple of times, it felt like such a huge turning point was the Poyer no-call and the fact that that got Buffalo off the field and allowed them to get the ball, possess the ball at the end of the first half, get a much-needed touchdown, and then they back it up with a strong offensive play in the second half. Really good teams overcome it. And teams that are still trying to figure some things out can get overwhelmed by it. And in the Ravens' particular case, it was enough. The series of events that followed was enough to hand them a loss. But I would not be in panic mode right now with this team. I still believe in this squad. If there are any question marks, the ones you just laid out are fair. And the other one would just be, in the passing game, is there enough there? I know we seem to be going back to that. Years go by and we're still talking about the wide receiving core, but it's a little thin. And Mark Andrews, who is such a huge weapon, he was not a big part of the action on Sunday. So who else will there be? Is there somebody else that's going to step forward in that role when necessary? And I think that still is a legitimate question moving forward here for Baltimore offensively.
Lamar make your job harder when he's a sleight of hand? I mean, you got to figure out.
Makes it funner, Nestor.
Well,
makes
for the camera guy too, right?
Yeah, it just makes it more enjoyable. I think as a play-by-play announcer, there's a different vibe with certain athletes when you walk into the venue, NBA, NFL, tennis, whatever it may be, different sports that I've called in my career.
I was going to ask you this dumb guy question and say, are you still jaded enough that Lamar's no different than seeing Garoppolo play this way? I mean, but I would think, I always felt as a reporter when Gretzky was playing or when Magic was on the court or I got to see Michael Jordan by any, I mean, even when the Orioles, Nolan Ryan would come in and pitch as a kid, there's just something about being a star, right? I mean, stars are stars for a reason, right?
It's palpable. There's just a different feeling in the air. And as an announcer, that's not to say that you're not going to be on your A game for any assignment. I've tried to pride myself. It doesn't matter the assignment. Yeah, I wasn't always doing the best games at CBS. I treated them like they were the best games. They were the most important games to me. I knew they were important to the audience, and they were important in the grand scheme of the NFL. And the same could be said. I've done the Nets games. This will be my 29th year. Have they been good every year? No. In fact, most of the years they were not very good, but the games were important. And when Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant and LeBron James are out there, it does seem to percolate everybody in attendance. And I would put Lamar Jackson in the category of this is a star that you can't take your eyes off of. He might do something you've never seen before. So as a play-by-play announcer, trust me, you cannot take any of that for granted. You've got to stay on it with him. I mean, there was a play, he should have been down. Von Miller's got him. It's done. It's not. With him, it's never quite over. And from the play-by-play perspective, that makes for some of the most memorable moments.
I love having Ian Eagle on the program. He always says yes. He always comes in. It's always fun. We're always I like having you on. We got some meat potatoes on the back end of a sort of a legendary game here. All right, so fun's all over. Like so summertime, I go to New York a lot. I go Billy Joel once, twice a year, go up, do this, do that, see something, go somewhere. But I've really started to get outside of Manhattan a little bit, right? So I'm over on the Brooklyn side and
that's
doing
great
things and finding pizza and getting out and all that. Someday in the summer when you're bored, put the ball cap on backwards. We're just like find some good food in Brooklyn because I'm feeling like you get off the train at the Barclays, you go in. I'm thinking within 8 blocks of there, you can eat pizza for the rest of your life. I would think, right? Literally, right?
Yeah. Oh, truly. It's insane how the quality is from place to place. What you would think is a hole in the wall could be the best pizza you've ever had. And that's why it's hard when you go outside the New York area and you're like, yeah, I think I'm in the mood for pizza in Portland.
Don't get a crab cake anywhere but here. I'm going to tell you right now.
No, it's true. It's true. I'm with you.
Ian Eagle's my dude. We'll get together and, you know, at some point, maybe not a press box, but I really appreciate you coming on.
You got it,
Nestor. Good luck to the Nets this year, and I'm sure we'll see you. You got a Ravens call down the line yet, or do you not know? This is weird. You're doing these NFC games. It's
yeah.
I can't figure it all out. It's a little different.
Yeah. When I do the NFC games, I feel like I should be leading into Murder, She Wrote at the end of the broadcast. It doesn't feel right on CBS, but you're going to see more crossover than ever before. It's starting to happen, and I think you're going to notice a change in the next year or two that games are just popping up everywhere, and the association will be much looser than it used to be. It's great in my mind, and I do Thursday nights on the radio, so that does give me at least exposure to a bunch of teams that I may not necessarily see on my CBS schedule. I like it. By the end of the year, I feel like I've seen 90% of the teams in the NFL live, and there is a difference. There's just a difference between being at a game and feeling it and seeing it for your own eyes as opposed to the synthesis of watching it on television. So I'm excited. It's something a little different. I'm sure I'm going to have a Baltimore game coming up. And one thing with Baltimore, there's always something cooking. So I'm always looking forward to it when I get
the hardest working man in show business. Hey, have fun in Denver. Enjoy your travels. Get your miles. Don't touch anybody. Wear a mask. Do all that stuff. We need you on the air. I appreciate you, man. Thanks
Thank
for coming
you,
on. It'll be fun. All right. Ian Eagle joining us here. CBS and the voice of the Brooklyn Nets and hopefully the voice of some future pizza for me in Brooklyn off there at the Barclays Center. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570 getting you ready for the Bengals and the Ravens, but looking back and trying to look forward and figuring it all out. We are Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.